Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law.
See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Welcome to the Hunting Beast Podcast, your source for hunting tactics, news, and stories. And now your host, Mario Traficante.
Hello, and welcome to Episode 5 of the Hunting Beast Podcast. Today we will be discussing summer scouting with the big buck serial killer himself, Dan Infault.
Hello, and welcome to this week's podcast. Today we're going to be talking to the big buck serial killer himself, Dan Infault, and we're going to cover the topic of summer scouting. We're getting towards the end of the summer here. The season is a couple weeks away. So Dan's going to share a few of his tips that he always uses during the summer to scout big bucks post-finding beds in the spring. So with that, we'll get started. And Dan, why don't you get started and tell us a little bit about summer scouting.
Good morning, Mario.
Good morning.
I think summer scouting is a little underrated. I know you've read the stories in my book because you helped me put it together.
Right.
If you notice, most of the big bucks that I've shot, a big part of the reason why I killed them was because of summer scouting. And I don't think a lot of people get that. You know, the shining, the glassing, the scouting on foot, the studying maps and stuff, you know, all that comes into play. But a lot of guys right now aren't really worried about that. They're more worried about shooting their bow and, you know, hanging out at the club or something. And they're going to worry about hunting when hunting comes, or they're out putting in food plots or whatever. But in my opinion, they're not doing enough summer scouting.
And that brings up a good point. We see a lot of guys get excited, right? A couple weeks out in the season, you know, some guys, they start pulling their bow out more. They start shooting it more. They may go check on the area that they're going to hunt. A lot of guys are setting out trail cameras and they're going into those areas and they're checking out picks that they got on trail cam. How can they incorporate a couple of these different techniques for summer scouting that you just mentioned, particularly glassing spots? What are good times of the day to go out glassing? Shining. How do you utilize shining in relationship to where you may or may not know a deer is bedding? A lot of these stories that you told me when you talk about the marshes back home where you hunt, you kind of have a keen understanding of the bedding areas that are in there. So when you would get up and go out shining at night, a lot of the open areas that you were shining, if you saw a buck in this field, you knew that he was bedding in a particular bedding area, so you could go in and hunt him later on that fall. I think the obsession buck kind of falls into that category with how it played out.
Well, with the obsession buck, I didn't know exactly where he was bedding. That buck, I found him on a July night, like 2 in the morning, when I couldn't sleep, so I went out shining. And stumbled upon him alongside the road, you know, shining areas I could hunt, and looking for potential targets. And then I started keeping tabs on him. I started coming out more often, different times of the night, and trying to locate where he was coming from. And I'd get him a little further back, a little closer, but I wasn't seeing him any place but coming up to that field from behind. So what I did with him was then I went and I took a walk, and he was coming through some fields and followed his tracks back and saw that he was coming out of a woodlot. Instead of following him into this square woodlot, it was probably like 20 acres.
Right.
I circled the woodlot from a distance, and he wasn't coming in and out from any other direction, at least not with any kind of regular activity. So I knew he was bedding in there. So he's coming from there, going into there. So then I could study a map and try to figure out where he was bedding. And then I watched a little bit from a distance, and he was coming out in the same spot on a regular basis, just the edge of dark, right up till season. And then a week before season, somebody came in there and set up a wooden platform, who just happened to have permission to hunt on that farm, and drove across his footprints and saw this heavy trail coming out of there, and made this big elaborate wooden stand over the top of this trail, cut down half the forest to make shooting lanes. And remember, this is 20 acres.
Right.
You know, obviously the deer was gone. Then I had to relocate him. And it took a while. It took me 2 years to kill that deer. And where I relocated him, you know, a lot of guys will say, you know, if you see a deer during the summer, it's not going to be there come hunting season. Well, I tend to disagree with that, because I've had some pretty good results killing deer that I see during the summer.
Right.
They'll disappear around the spot where you're seeing them. And now we're talking mature bucks, because the immature ones that are real nice, like say 3-year-olds, they're kind of displaced. They're not the dominant buck and stuff, and they'll go and move to new territory, but it still ain't far.
Right.
You know, let's say, you know, a mile or two. Well, for a guy running just trail cameras, he's not going to see that buck no more. You know, for a guy who's got permission in those areas or it's public, you can go around and you can find that buck again. You know, he's around there somewhere. You know, and if you're out there looking hard enough, you'll find him. I relocated that obsession buck about a mile and across a couple roads from where he was in another place I had permission. And he holed up in a bedding area there that made him almost impossible to kill, because it was wide open. He had his back against a tree, and it was wide open. He could see you coming for a mile.
Right.
And it was set up for west wind, and west or northwest wind, he was always in that spot. You could go back and you could glass that from a distance, and you'd see him get up every evening, but he wouldn't move far enough in daylight.
So you touched on the glassing portion. So first, if we get back to shining, you found him a couple miles down from where you first sighted him. So I heard a couple things that you said, you know, that you went over pretty quickly, but the concept of shining. If I shine one area or one field, locate a buck in a field, what are some good steps to start breaking that down? I can take a look at a topo map or an aerial map and do a gut check on where I think this buck might be coming and going from. If I have an estimation of where I think his bed is or where I think his travel routes are, then take a look at that aerial map and look at the roadways which you have access to, where you can logically go down and shine.
Mm-hmm.
And then you probably, over the course of the next couple weeks, you want to break that out into sort of a grid pattern, and as much as you can get out and check that entire area, shine those open areas to where you think he might be coming out to.
And at different time frames.
Okay.
Because timing is important. Like, let's see that obsession.
Well, the obsession buck, when did he come? When did
I
you
was
see
seeing
him?
Him at 2 a.m.
Okay, and that's it.
So when I, with a buck like that, I start hitting other areas too. I start saying, well, maybe he's coming from here. Well, that would put him in field A at this time. That would put him in field B at this time. And I start looking around. Maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong, but maybe I can confirm that by shining. In this case, I confirmed it with tracks. But in a lot of cases, I'll see a buck in a certain field middle of the night. I'll be able to locate him in a different area at a different time. And then another thing you can do is you can look at what the wind direction was. Because sometimes they only bed in a certain spot in a certain wind. So only on that wind are you seeing him in that field, meaning he's bedding somewhere so based on that wind in that area. And a lot of cases, I've got these areas already scouted out. I know all the big buck bedding areas.
Right.
So I see a buck in a field, I can literally say he's bedding, 90% sure he's bedding here, and if he's not, he's bedding in one of these other three.
Right.
You know, and that's how I pin them down. There's one field that I glass a lot. Every time I see a buck in that field, the next day, if I hunt it, I find him in the bedding area that's adjacent to it, that's almost a half mile away, but it's the first good big buck bedding area. And it's been consistent for me for about 15 years to shine that field, see a buck there, as long as it's early in the night. If I see one within the first hour after dark, I know exactly where he's bedding.
So a guy starting this out for the first time that really kind of wants to get serious about it, they probably should put together either, it'd be easy enough to put together a physical journal on a notebook or a mental journal if they don't want to keep notes in that fashion, but they should be tracking, obviously, their location of where they shine this buck, wind direction, the time of the day that they shined it. And I guess it applies to glassing also, because obviously if during daylight hours and you come across a mature buck or a group of bucks, you know, record the time, record the wind, record the location, and then based on that, start building sort of a scatter map of each of the different locations that you've seen this buck and on what winds and on what times, and then use that to correlate it to where you know where there's bedding at on this property or adjacent properties.
You're spot on. One thing I'll add that was, you know, something I found out accidentally, but it might be a benefit for some of the listeners, is that me filming this stuff has been very, very beneficial. So if you're going out and you and your buddy, have your buddy holding the camera. And it doesn't have to be great footage or anything. It's not something you're going to use later on or something maybe. But if you get this on film, you'd be surprised how you think a buck's a different buck. And you get back and when you can study it, slow it down, and, oh, that's that buck from over here.
Right.
That's this buck. And I never knew that because you think, you see them. That's this buck. But a lot of times with shining, you just see a glimpse of them or even glassing. And you're kind of in awestruck about how big it is or whatever for a second. Or you're looking for, okay, where is he coming out from or whatever? And you don't get to lock down that rack. And in a lot of cases, you think you're looking at two different bucks and it's the same buck. Or you are looking at two different bucks and you thought it was one, you know?
That's a good point. For people that have never glassed or shined before, things can happen relatively quickly. You're clipping along the side of the road. You catch a glimpse of a buck. At night, shadows can play into it. The buck can start get spooked and start traveling back into the woods. So, and I think you even had a case where you guys shined a large typical in a field, and you didn't even know that you shined that until you looked at the footage.
That's correct. That was a 200-inch typical. I mean, world class, and it was living in a public swamp, and I would have never even known he was there, except for when we were shining. I couldn't see it from my point of view, but Dan Jr., who zoomed in on the camera, and because I couldn't see it, I was kind of in a hurry to get to the next spot or whatever, and he says, hold on, I think it's a good one, you know, and I was impatient. But when we got home, I looked at that footage and was like, holy cow, that's probably, well, it is the biggest typical I've ever filmed, and it was world class, if not a world record for a bow hunter.
Right.
And we did have, at that time I was guiding, one of my clients did have an opportunity to see it in the wild from his stand, and he was hunting that buck. He was set up on it, and he wouldn't have been if we hadn't had that footage.
Yeah, I think that snippet of video is still on the intro of the Hunting Beast videos.
Yeah,
pretty sure
it is, yeah.
It's on there. Okay, so starting out, you know, we kind of categorize this. I've got a map of an area I want to go shine. I've got my journal, so I'm taking notes on where I'm spotting these bucks or specific buck. I'm taking account for the wind. I'm taking account for the time of the day. How do I put all those pieces together? You said you actually got down and got on foot. What if I don't know anything about the bedding and it's mid to late summer? and I've got these bucks or a buck coming out to a specific pattern. How aggressive do I want to be, or do I need to make some assumptions as to where this thing is living, and only go in and set up when I want to hunt them on the right wind?
Well, there's a couple things that come into play there. Number one is to study maps. Number two is to look at where you've seen the buck, you know, shining, and what times it was, what direction he was traveling, where you think he's coming from. And when you're done playing with the maps and stuff and making some assumptions, and you want to get in there on your foot and get aggressive, well, that's where the binoculars come in handy. I mean, you can get up in a spot and watch where you think he is, watch it close, right at the edge of darkness, and in summer they move earlier. They get into summer patterns, and those deer will make mistakes, especially, you know, you got a cold front coming up or something's happening, you know, get the right moon phase or something, they're going to move a little early. Get out there that day and watch that spot, you know, where you think he is, and start putting more pieces together. I mean, a big part of what happens with the summer scouting is you get little bits and pieces. You never get the full puzzle, you know, all together.
So will you actually...
But the more pieces you have, the more likely you are to kill this buck.
Right. So you actually make a transition from roadside scouting, per se, to getting into an observation stand type scenario where you may get up high, but not too close to disturb or bump the area, where you can observe with binoculars or even film from a distance to track the buck.
Right.
I guess here's the other question, because I know this comes up for me. When you said you were filming the obsession buck at 2 in the morning, what is there a good measure on how far you think a buck might travel? I need to make an assumption as to when he gets out of his bed, but the time it takes him to get from point A to point B.
Well,
how far do they travel in a half hour? How far do they travel in an hour?
That depends on the time of night. And that might sound a little weird, but when they first get up, they're a little apprehensive. They move slower. So when you see one within an hour of darkness, he hasn't gone far, in my opinion.
Okay.
But when you see one at 2 in the morning, it could be coming from a couple miles away.
Right.
But you know he's in the area. So now you can start tracking back. But just because you see him at 2 in the morning doesn't mean he's coming from that distance either. He might be right in that area. Those big bucks don't travel as much as the younger ones. They stay put a little more.
So really the glassing and the shining is going to give you that consistency of a specific area that he's in, and that he's always coming to that spot. But yeah. You gotta really use those pieces to center in and focus on where he might be.
Now, if you're going to talk about shining, you should probably mention that, you know, first off, it's illegal to a lot of our listeners. Can't even do it.
Right.
You know, and the ones that can, there's been this assumption that anybody with a spotlight is a poacher.
Right.
And that really isn't true. I mean, if you drove around with a gun in your car shooting out of the windows, you're going to get caught.
Right.
I mean, you're going to go back and pick that deer up after you shot. I know people do it. People get caught for it every year. But if they're doing that on a regular basis, they're getting caught.
Right.
That's my belief. Maybe there's some areas, like in the Northwoods or something, where they can get so far away from people that they can get away with it. But I can't tell you how many times I get pulled over. I mean, I get pulled over every year shining. Get the truck searched. And welcome it. I mean, because if they're doing that, they're catching other people.
Right.
But along with that assumption comes a lot of people who don't even know it's legal who are going to harass you when you shine.
Yep, had it happen.
Yeah, exactly. Anybody who does it a lot has had it happen.
Right.
So you have to, just walk lightly. I mean, I like to shine the public properties. I like to shine where I can hunt. And I do like to shine the property across the street from where I hunt. But I'm not shining it if there's some guy there that's a hothead or whatever, because he's going to do no good for the sport.
Right.
He's going to go around screaming about you or whatever. So if he doesn't want me over there, I'm not shining over. I'm avoiding that situation. So it's just something to think about. So you want to get into glassing?
Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about glassing and, you know, how it can be utilized.
One of the big things for me is getting away from the main road, because I think those big bucks tread lightly around public areas. That doesn't mean they don't come out in those areas. It doesn't mean you can't get lucky and see one from a public road. But if you're seeing a lot, other people are too. Hidden fields that are back a ways, those are nice. You know, and another thing I do with glassing is I'll actually walk ridges and stuff where people walk and glass down into bedding areas and such. And it's a lot easier to do during the summer than it is to do, or late summer, than it is to do during hunting season when you're pressed for time.
Right.
You know, with work and everything else. But if you think back to that giant 11-pointer, I got that one that was really wide. That one, I had scouted the area, found a bedding area. So it was a remote piece of public. I went back in there during the late summer, walked these ridges and glassed those bedding areas because you could see down into them from up above. And that buck was bedding in an ox bowl on a river and coming out to this ridge. And I spotted him. I even filmed him a little bit. Bad footage, but I got some footage of him getting out of his bed and moving around down there. And he had a scrape there, and ultimately I ended up shooting him over that scrape. It was either opening day or the day after. I had gone on a bear hunt, and when I got back, I went climbing that tree midday. It was raining, and when it stopped raining, he got up to work the scrape, and I shot him.
Yeah, that's the buck that was coming across the river. You had another buck come in, too, I believe, right, to you before him.
No.
Well, that was different. No,
you're thinking of the 400-pound slob.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And that buck, too. I hadn't even thought about that, but that was a glassed buck. That was a buck I found in summer, and he was living right next to a public land parking lot. And I spotted him one day, backed up the truck, got in the right spot, and got the glasses on him. And it was a very, very large buck. And I was watching him and trying to pick up a pattern and figure him out by driving and this is a good tip. I had a old station wagon I bought just for hunting. It had some like I Break for Raccoon stickers on it and stuff, and I would dress in plain clothes. I had a newspaper. I don't read newspapers. I don't like liberal jabber jibber. But I'd get the newspaper out whenever a car would go by like I'm reading the newspaper. Then I'd put it down and I'd watch for that buck. And he was coming out with about 140 class 10-pointer, but he was in the upper 160s.
Right.
And I ended up shooting that buck the first time I hunted him. I just kept watching and watching and waiting for everything to be right. And I was even glassing him into the season. He was coming out on a certain wind, and there was a, you know, certain way you had to hunt him. It had to be a just off wind. And I got in there and sitting there, and the 140-inch buck came in first. Came out of the bedding area through the river and turned at me. And I was sitting in a little willow crotch. And he comes right up to me, and I had to sit there perfectly motionless with this thing looking right at me. It turns and walks, you know, 6 feet from me, starts working to scrape, and then he walks off, and I'm watching him go out the distance, and I'm thinking, you know, what am I, crazy letting this thing walk away? It's a nice buck, you know, and thinking that other buck ain't ever going to come in. And out of the corner of my eye, I just see a ripple in the water, and I look over, and there he is standing there walking through the river coming in. So passing that 140 really made my day.
Yeah. Yeah, made your day. So with the glassing concept, I mean, obviously what you were talking about is, you know, you want to cover yourself a little. Don't come pulling up there with all your equipment, dressed in camouflage, with your spotting scope hanging outside your window. Other people are going to take notice, and they're going to wonder why you're doing it. And if they're hunters, they're probably going to go there, and when they don't see you there, spot and try to get a track on that buck that you're doing.
Right. If I show up a spot looking at a buck and people know it's me, you better believe they know something's in the area and they're going to be there.
Right. So some of the same concepts. I mean, this is more during daylight hours. So you're going in potentially just as if you would be going in at the time you would hunt. Mm-hmm. You're going to either set up, in one case, you set up adjacent to the public hunting ground in the parking lot, but in a lot of cases, you're going in on foot, mm-hmm. stands and sticks.
Either out of an observation stand, which is quite common for me this time of the year,
right,
to watch an area. Otherwise, I'm just slowly walking through an area where they'll accept human scent, but I can see a distance.
Okay.
Where I can see a transition where I'm thinking there might be bedding along.
So, and the key is, I think, where you can see a distance.
Yeah, you don't want to be on top of these things, or you're just going to spook them.
Right, right. And I think that can play out differently depending on the property that you're on. If you're in hill country, there's an abundance of areas where you can get up high and see a distance. If I'm in marsh or I'm in swamp, it's depending, I suppose, you know, how far off you can actually see bucks moving in that. In those situations, you're probably using more observation stands. And
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So after you've done your glassing and you've done your shining and you located this buck, why don't you talk a little bit more about getting on foot and actually tracking them back? How much can someone actually do during the summer months, and how much should they do?
Well, if you don't have the intel you need, get it. But if you have the intel, and I see this a lot, guys want to confirm their intel. So then they backtrack further, and they end up bumping the buck out, you know, a good percentage of the time. If I don't have what I need, I'm going to get it. I'm going to follow that buck back, and I'm going to get the information I need. But if I have a pretty good guess on what's going on, hands off, I'm moving in for the kill when I go in. Some bucks will let you walk right up to their bedding area as long as you don't go in it and look at their trail the whole way and maybe be spooky for a day or two. Some bucks won't spook at all. Some bucks will get out of Dodge. They'll move the next county over. So you got to treat them all like they're going to get out of Dodge.
Right.
And you got to, if you need the intel, get it. You know, I always say, you know, don't go in there and spook it. Don't go in until you're going to hunt and stuff. But there's a time to go in. If you don't have the intel, go in and get it. And there's been plenty of bucks I've gotten onto and killed or killed for clients by walking through the woods finding...
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
Sign, and when you see good tracks and stuff coming out of a potential bedding area, you put the guy there, and he kills it. Most of the time in guiding, I had to really, really hold back. Because you want to go in there and check because you think there's a good buck in the area. And it's got to be checked.
Right.
But you don't want to do it until you got your client there. Because then I'd go in, I'd find a sign, and I'd get him in there before that buck ever came through and smelled I was there. So if I got an assumption, and I still got to make a setup, I still got to set a stand up and stuff, and it's this late in the ball game, that stand is getting set up the day I hunt that morning. You know, and when I was guiding, that's what I do when I wanted to get somebody on something fresh. Is I put those guys out in stands in the morning, and I'd go scouting. And I'd go find something fresh. I'd get those guys in there for the evening before that deer ever came through and smelt that we were in there. And a lot of that, too, relates back to, okay, I shined one in an area. I don't know this area. This area's got a lot of transitions and stuff. I'm going to go back there, and I'm going to find some big buck sign, because I know there's one back there. Right. Then I'm going to kill this thing.
Right.
So then I got to get on foot and go cover a lot of ground. And if I do it now, I might spook them. I might not. If I do it today, I'm going to hunt. You know, number one, I'm on fresh stuff where he is now. Number two, he hasn't smelled me in there. But that doesn't say that I don't get on foot now and go and cover some woodlots. I mean, why not? If you don't have any intentions on hunting these areas, you go look at a public land map. Like I like to use that All Outdoors Atlas.
Right.
I go through there, find some public stuff. Just go to some place where I haven't been yet. Go walk the land, go look at the bedding areas, go find them and stuff. And if I find something looks hot or something, I might back off, and then I'll go back and give it a try. Maybe I spooked them, maybe I didn't. But I wouldn't even know about the spot if I hadn't walked in.
If you haven't walked in there.
So there's give and take. Yeah, you're doing damage. But you're not going to know what's going on if you don't get your feet wet.
Right. Right. Does the equation change at all for a guy, let's say, that owns a smaller piece of private? He's got a couple access points to it. how can he utilize glassing and, you know, maybe even shining? What if his property is landlocked? So he's got logging road access to it. Should he go in on foot, let's say at night, and shine a field that's on his property?
I probably wouldn't.
Okay.
But if he's got a field on his property and he's got a spot where he can get to where he usually accesses his property or whatever, where he can see a distance, I'd glass.
Okay.
I'd have an observation stand or two. I'd sit back. I'd probably have a camera on there, and if it's legal, I'd have some sort of food source underneath the camera, and I'd know what's there. You know, but I would refrain from walking through the middle of the property with a spotlight at night. I'd refrain from going in there and pounding, scouting, or over hunting it. And I hear this a lot from guys who have small properties. Well, I can't hunt like Dan because I got a small property. You don't think I hunt small properties? Look at the size of Dave's property.
Right.
I mean, I got a little patch of woods in the middle and a couple tree lines.
Yeah.
And we still kill big bucks off there. But all the properties around there that are like that, the guys don't kill anything. You know why? Because they overhunt it. They go in there and they're hunting too much. We back off, stay out of there, and move in just for the kills. And guys can't get that concept. They're like, well, I got to hunt. You know, and you say, well, go hunt in public. Well, there's no good public around here. Well, then hunt less. You know, if you can't take a trip to public, hunt less. You're not getting it. Because right. These guys will whine and cry all the time about how small their property is and how, because of that size of the property, they can't kill a deer. You can kill deer on small properties, and you can kill big bucks on small properties. You just have to be patient and sit back. You're more likely to kill a big buck on a small property hunting 4 times out of the year than hunting 50.
I agree.
Your odds go up.
Yep.
The less you hunt.
I agree.
If it gets to zero, odds don't go up. But there's a give and take. And these guys who can't find another property to hunt aren't looking hard enough or driving far enough. There's places to hunt.
Yeah, I agree, because I've experienced it from a deer traffic standpoint on, you know, smaller private, where excited to hunt, so literally pound the property every weekend and times during the week when I can, and, you know, initially first couple years back hunting it, saw a lot of deer, and then that started to taper off, and you know, recently started switching back to staying out of there, literally only going in a couple times a year, and seeing a lot more deer. I think it's, you know, guys, it's hard to get that concept because we're excited. You want to get out in the woods and you want to explore other areas. But really what opened that up for me was finding, you know, public spots to hunt and other places to hunt where that wasn't my sole place, you know. You kind of got to get outside your comfort zone and not go to the spot that's easy. Good. So we covered shining, glassing, tracking back, putting all those pieces together. Is there anything else with
trail
summer
cameras.
Scouting? Trail cameras? So how do you utilize them? Because there's a lot of... I have a lot of guys coming up to me now saying, hey, check out this buck on trail cam. We got this coming. They're getting really excited. They're sending me pictures, things like that. How do you utilize them?
Well, you don't put them anywhere near bedding.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people do. I can remember right behind my house, down in the swamp, there was a little patch of bedding cover in some cattails. And I walked around there one day, and there's this just huge rub line coming out of there, you know, and didn't think much of it. And then the next year, I go in there in late summer, and there's big, heavy tracks coming out of there. And I go and I put a camera on that spot, and I got a picture of the biggest typical 12-point buck you've ever seen in velvet coming out of there. And the day I set the camera up, and not one more picture.
Right.
And I did locate that buck again later, you know, about a mile down the road. I didn't kill him. I don't know if anybody ever did. I never heard about it. But my point is, did I ruin my hunt? You know, by putting that camera in so close, going in there and setting that up, getting my scent in there, messing around with where do I put this camera, breaking a limb off and stuff. I let the deer know he was being hunted. I mean, I slapped him in the ass and said, game on.
Right.
And you don't want to do that. You know, so how do you do it? What you got to do is you got to back off. You got to let him have his space. Around their bedding area, they believe that they're safe. They know that area. They know if somebody encroaches on it. They know they smell them, they see them, or they hear them. And they got to set up that way so that they can smell, see, or hear anybody that gets within their safe zone. So if you get anywhere near that, it's no longer safe. They don't feel safe. They want out. So what I do is I stay a ways away from that on a food source, where the deer are crossing, a human access trail that's used by humans occasionally. And if I'm a little bit close, I like to shoot over an obstacle, laying down a tree or something, without ever walking by that deer trail, so that that deer doesn't ever smell me or associate me with that trail. And you know, get the cameras out there, get them working, but keep them away from the bedding areas. If you put them on food plots, if you put them on piles of corn, those are the places to have them.
So you're talking about setting up your trail cams, backing off, getting out of the bedding areas, getting them on fields, getting them on food plots, getting them over, you know, corn piles if it's legal, staying out of that safe zone where that buck feels safe. And as we talked about with glassing and with shining, technology affords you a little advantage with a trail cam, because a lot of them are recording the ambient temperature, they're recording the specific time they took the picture. Some, you know, depending on their connection, you can even get other weather properties out of it, so you can start to put all those pieces together. And obviously you have sometimes video or a still picture, you can start making a catalog of these bucks that are coming and going on your property.
Right, and to go further with what you're just saying is, you can back up, you could use one of those sites like weather.com or something, and look what the weather was when the picture was taken. So you can start to relate that back, you know, wind-wise. Because you're right, you get weather information, you get time, you get all kinds of stuff on those cameras nowadays, but you don't usually get wind direction. But right. You can go back on you know, one of these weather websites and look at what the wind direction was at that particular time in that particular spot.
And timing is a key thing. I think you talked about that, where Andre had used that, and you guys proved out the moon phase concept based on just trail cam pictures where he had buck activity.
Right. He was telling me about moon phase, and I was telling him hogwash. And this goes back years ago, because obviously I believe in moon phase now. But he was saying moon overhead, moon underfoot, and I didn't believe it. But I'm over by his house, and it's a whole different world there. You know, because it's a private ranch, and deer do what they want. You know, and you start watching these deer, and they're all coming out at the time of moon phase, you know, in the evening. And when the moon isn't there, they're not. They're coming out later. And I still was skeptical, and he got out all these trail cam pictures of big bucks, and it correlated. Because he was running like 20 cameras, and it correlated. You could sit there and you could graph it and correlate it with that moon phase. But that was because of the trail cameras.
Right. You wouldn't have been able to do that without having that number of trail cameras out. But the technology allows you to really get some good intel data.
You know, too, you look at stand study. The stand did a study. Now, when I look at it, I see it a little different than Stan, but maybe because I want to.
Right.
But his study showed kind of the opposite of what Andre showed, that there wasn't as much correlation. And that's good, because now he could use those cameras to show that in his area it wasn't working, you know, where it was over there. But cameras can be like a scientific study of your own. You know, they're kind of cool.
Yeah. And another thing to kind of note overall on this, when we talked about glassing, shining, and the use of cameras, one of the biggest advantages of this is that if you get a buck or a target buck or a trophy buck that you see doing any one of these activities, whether or not you would pinpoint the exact location that the buck is in is almost like the icing on the cake. At least you know that if you're hunting properties within a 2-square mile radius or 4-square mile, 5-square mile, you know that buck is at least in the area, and there's a nice buck in that area, because as you mentioned, there's not big bucks running around everywhere.
Yeah, they're not behind every tree. So if you get a pitcher and you can't figure out the bedding, you can't figure out, you know, where he's coming from, going to, or whatever, you just know where he is at, you know, this time period in the night, or this time period when you glass him during the summer, now you don't have him. You don't know where he's at. Well, hunt the areas where you're seeing the big bucks, because he's in that area somewhere. Hunt the sign. Hunt the bedding areas. Hunt the terrain for that particular type of animal, knowing that he's in the area. You'd be hard-pressed to have me, you know, out glassing and see two bucks I want to shoot after glassing 40 properties, and then go hunt the other, you know, other 28 or 38 properties and not hunt the two where I'm seeing the big bucks. What I'm saying is concentrate where you're seeing them. So once again, that glassing, shining, all that relates back into your success.
Yeah. Another good tip, I think, is, and I, you know, learned this from talking to Stan on the other podcast, was one of the bigger bucks that he shot that was on that triangle woodlot, he actually first spotted that buck coming back from a fishing trip. It wasn't even an area that he normally glassed. So I think sort of a lesson to be learned with that is keep your binoculars in your truck. Maybe keep your journal in there, your spotlight. If you drive around on a regular basis, obviously pay attention to the road, safety first, but, you know, scan those fields.
Keep your eyes and your ears open.
Right.
I mean, you can hear tips, you can see things, you know, it's all good.
Yeah. So what are some, we talked about kind of the good portion of trail cameras. What are, and these might be obvious, what are some don'ts of trail cams? I mean, things that could screw up public area that you're hunting, or even a, you know, private area that you're hunting. What do you see guys do?
Well, the main thing I see them do, especially on private properties, is they ruin their property. They put up way too many cameras, they put them all over the place, and then they go check them all the time. And deer don't like human scent, so they go over to the next property. They move, they relocate. Or they get real nocturnal and they get to understand that they're being hunted. And when you take a mature buck and you tell them somebody's trying to kill you, they get really good at survival.
Right.
So that's one of the big no-nos. Another big no-no is putting the cameras too close, getting too aggressive with them. A lot of guys get addicted to trail cameras. They get addicted to the pictures they're getting. They love it. They love showing all their buddies all these bucks and stuff. Well, it comes down to this. Do you want to hang a picture of that buck up, or do you want to hang that rack on your wall? Which one do you want?
Yeah.
So if you really, really, really want to get some great pictures, go for it. But if you want to put that rack on the wall, you need to back off. You need to use that camera for intel, not for pretty pictures.
Right. So one thing that's interesting to me, because sometimes I hear there's some guys like, you know, I'm not gonna go out on opening weekend. It's too hot. Deer aren't gonna be moving. I'm not gonna go out. What have you experienced with collecting summer intel through your glassing, through your shining, through your cameras, through your on foot, that's allowed you to pattern a buck and kill it on opening weekend?
Well, first let me address that question, because I hear that all the time. It's too hot out opening day, and you know, you got to wait till it cools down to get buck movement and stuff. And I would say that when you hunt a season that opens in September, maybe even in October to some degree, October 1st or early September, the very best day to get the biggest buck of your life is opening day. It's not peak of rut, it's opening day. That's when those big bucks are the most vulnerable. Yeah, a lot of big bucks are vulnerable during the rut running around, but the biggest, oldest bucks are the most vulnerable opening day. You know, I've shot some monsters opening day, and I know Andre has too. I mean, that's the day to be out there. And if you got that mindset, it's too hot, it's too cold, this probably isn't for you. You know, you're probably the easygoing guy who's just looking to put meat in your freezer.
Right.
Because the drive in somebody is what makes them a great hunter. What's in my heart, what's in my mind, what's making me stare at the clock at work, What are you dreaming about? What are you thinking about? Somebody who says, I'm not going out opening day because it's too hot out, doesn't have that dream in their heart.
Right.
They don't. And maybe they should rethink their goals of why they're hunting big trophy bucks. You know, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. I'm just saying they're probably not playing the same game me and you are playing.
Right.
You know.
No, and I agree. I think, you got to set goals and you got to want to achieve them. And if it's 85 degrees out and humid, you get out there. Because what I experienced, if you're hunting in the middle of a marsh and it's that hot and there's some nice big fat acorns dropping, that there's going to be a buck that's getting up to eat those, regardless of the temperature.
You know, guy we were just talking to in the shop, me and you just had a room. Last year he comes in from hunting and says, Dan, I just saw the biggest buck I've ever seen in my life. It was a giant 10-pointer on my brother's property. It came right past me. I didn't quite get a shot. It walked right through in the evening. It was early season.
Yep.
I said,
I remember.
Get out there and shoot it tomorrow. Okay. Comes in the next day. I said, did you get the buck? He says, you know, I was a little tired. I didn't go out. Don't be that guy.
Well, don't be that guy if what your goal is to shoot a big buck.
Right.
Because
his brother's goal was to shoot a big buck, and his brother went out there and shot that buck.
Yeah.
Because of the intel he got from his brother.
Yeah.
So that's the part of where I'm saying keep your ears open, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if it's important to you and you want to take a trophy buck, then, you know, you gotta take opportunity when it comes to you. And if it's intel on a buck, if it's you've got a buck coming to a field at a certain time, or you've got them glassed and patterned in a certain area, use your intel and go in and make the hunt.
You know, part of it's luck, finding a big buck to hunt, especially if you're after something world-class or whatever. But if you don't have those cameras out, if you're not out glassing and looking, if you're not listening to things people are saying to you when they've seen a big buck or whatever and then going over and looking for yourself, if you're not shining and it's legal where you're at, you're not taking opportunities to create luck. A lot of guys say, oh, hunting's all luck. Maybe it is. But I create the opportunity for luck to get to me.
Right.
So when we speak about luck, I mean, think about this year. I got a trail camera out for bears, and what shows up on it? Some giant buck.
Right.
Yeah, is that luck? Yeah, it's luck. But now, you know, some guys wouldn't take advantage of that, and some guys wouldn't, you know, think about where's this buck coming from or whatever. And, you know, you got to take advantage of that luck when it hits you.
Right. Yeah, you got that nice buck on trail cam, so now it's a matter of game on. I got to start looking at his access routes, looking at the potential maps in the area to see where he might be bedding, and trying to put all those pieces together. Yeah, is it cool to get a world-class buck on with a bunch of trail cam pictures of him? Yeah, but you know, now it's a matter of, well, what can I do to put myself in the best position to shoot him? So, really, in summary, with a lot of this stuff, as far as equipment goes for getting out and doing summer scouting, get yourself a nice pair of binoculars where you can reach out and see from a distance. That's key. You're going to need a spotlight, you know, a high-powered spotlight if you're going to do shining at night.
Spotting scope ain't a bad idea if you're serious about it.
Yeah, a spotting scope, if you can afford it, you know, pick one up. They're nice. Get yourself a gas card because you'll be spending some gas driving around.
a mount for your spotting scope that goes on your window.
Helps
ain't a
keep
bad
it
idea.
Steady.
You know.
Get yourself a journal, a notebook where you can record. Again, you want to record the temperature, the time, the bucks that you saw, the location where you saw them. Get yourself a road atlas like Dan, you know, described. You can even mark on there where were you when you saw specific bucks. Or nowadays with technology, depending on, you know, what you have at your disposal, you can bring a little tablet or even a laptop and mark it right on maps as you go.
Can you talk about that book, that atlas? You know, what I've done that's been real successful for me is to look at all the public land that's around me and all the private land that I have access to and make a route and go around and glass all those properties. You know, look at them all. And it might not even be much of a property, but you never know what's going to come out of the woodwork. You never know when you're going to get lucky.
Right. The other thing is with this, and we kind of touched on this, about how if you want to be successful at this, you have to make it a priority like you do everything else. So if you tell yourself, I want to get into summer scouting, I've got myself my binoculars, my spotting scope, my spotlight, and things like this. Now you got to set up a schedule, especially if you're, you know, a family man, you got kids, you got obligation with work. Set up a schedule where you know that, okay, let's just say Tuesdays and Thursdays, I'm going to go out scouting. I'm going to scout in the early evening. I'm going to glass before dark, and maybe I'm going to get up in the middle of the night and make one trip and venture out in the middle of the night for a couple hours. And maybe because of your work schedule, you can only do that once a week due to just being tired. But plan for it, set up a schedule, and get out and do it.
You know, it's a give and take. I mean, take your kids out glassing with you. Everybody likes watching animals and stuff, if you're doing it from the car, you know. But do it as much as you can, is what you can fit in. But you can always, you know, oh, your wife's running to the store? Well, I'm going to glassing. You know, I'll meet you back. You know, make time.
Yeah, and that's a great point with the kids because, you know, my kids love watching wildlife. We took a trip out to South Dakota, and we went through the wildlife loop and the Badlands, and they and Custer State Park, they loved it. You know, they had a journal of how many pronghorn, how many whitetail, how many mule deer, how many buffalo they were seeing. And you can, and literally, you can involve them in that experience when you're going out glassing and shining. They'll get excited about it, you know. And that's a really good point. And it's good quality time spent with your family, too. Well, with that, I think we'll wrap up this session of the podcast. Again, this is just another piece, guys, that you can combine with your spring scouting and your location of your deer beds and other things. And, you know, summer scouting is another piece. We're a few weeks out here from the season opener. And Dan's hoping that some of his summer scouting can put the pieces together for his monster bear bait buck. So,
you know, you think about it too. I mean, you know, think about all those bucks in that book of mine.
Yep.
My top bucks, and I'm repeating this because I said it earlier, my top bucks have come from intel I got summer scouting.
Right. And if you listen to some of the other podcasts where we talked about sign and picking up on sign, go back and listen to that. You'll find a lot of the stories that Dan's telling about the specific bucks that he killed in the books. A lot of those are leading back to summer scouting. Summer scouting correlated to getting on foot, adjacent to bedding, and identifying hot sign, going in and killing the buck. So it all ties together. It's just a matter of putting those pieces together. So again, if you have any questions or comments, log on to thehuntingbeast.com and you could post it on the podcast forum. Thank you.
That concludes today's podcast episode. Please go to thehuntingbeast.com to post any discussions, questions, or comments regarding today's podcast episode.